looking back on 40 years of alternative music. It's the Roots of Alternative podcast with Jack and Dixon for 95X.
And welcome back to the Roots of Alternative podcast as we look back on the last 40 years of alternative music and what a ride it's been so far. We're doing a little bit different today. We are not only, you not only can hear us on the podcast and the audio version of it, but we are also coming to you in a video this time so you can see our faces. Here we are. And this is, if this is your first time checking out the podcast, thank you so much for stopping by. My name is Jack. And of course, we are joined by Dixon here. How you doing, man?
Good. What's up, man? How are you?
Pretty good. First of all, I can't believe we're actually done with the 90s. It was so much fun.
We're almost to the halfway point of the entire point, which is to get all the way up to date.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's something we got to talk about because like, we started this in 2020 and the goal was to go to 2020, but we might have to go to 2021. We'll see what happens. It's a long way off. But in any event, why are we here today and why are we doing this? Why are we coming to you visually this time as well? Well, we want to do something a little bit special because we spent so much time really digging deep into the 90s. And I think I can speak for Dixon when I say that I think this was our favorite decade yet. You know, we've only did the 80s beforehand, but we really, really enjoyed doing the 90s, I think, just because we both remember it. I was a kid. Dixon was in his prime at that time, or I don't know if, would you say it was your
prime? I'm still in my prime, son.
You're still in your prime.
I was in my beginning stages of the music industry come 1993, 1994.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of memories from this time period, for sure. And we wanted to do our due diligence and go back and look at each year once again and rank our three favorite songs from each year. And then at the very end, we're going to do our top 10. I think we're going to see some interesting comparisons here between what I'm into and what you're into, Dixon. This should be pretty fun.
And just to be clear, we said favorite. So these are Jack's three favorite songs from each year, my favorite songs from each year. We're not saying these are the best. We're not ranking them on any scale because music is art and art is not a competition. These are just Jack's three favorite songs from each year, my three favorite songs from each year. Feel free to leave a comment with your three favorite songs from each year. And then when we get to the top 10, I'll tell you how I put mine together before we do that because I had a very specific thing in mind.
I'm excited to hear that. Before we dive into it, I do just want to say once again, if you've been a listener of the podcast up until this point, want to say thank you very much for your support. We've gotten such amazing feedback from you over the last, well, since last, what was it, July when we started this? It was a while ago when we were in quarantine. We're still working from home. So this has been a lot of fun for both of us. Again, the 90s were such a great time. And what do you say we get into it?
I'm down, dude.
All right. So without further ado, let's look at our top three favorite songs from each year. And we're going to start with the year 1990. So Dixon, for 1990, here's my top three. Number three, Jane's Addiction, Been Caught Stealing. Number two, Depeche Mode, Personal Jesus. And number one, got to go with The Cure, Never Enough.
All right. Well, we've got some crossover there, which I wasn't expecting. I went with the stuff that I listened to the most each year and the stuff that I still continue to listen to and things that may have had an impact on me as a musician, not really a musician, but I play in bands. I just don't consider myself a musician. But these are the things that stuck with me the most. And for 1990, we're on the same page with Jane's Addiction and Been Caught Stealing. We're on kind of the same page because we both said Depeche Mode, but for me, it was Policy of Truth. That one was just a little bit darker. It was a different side of Depeche Mode for me. And one that we actually missed when we did the episode that I kicked myself in the ass for because one of my favorite albums of all time is Let Love Rule from Lenny Kravitz, which is the title track from that album.
Yeah, that was a good one. I don't think we did talk about that one. Okay. Well, all right. So we're 1 year into it. We got a little bit of crossover. So
a little bit.
That's interesting. And I got to say too, you really did open me up to a lot of stuff that I didn't know. And that again is the whole point of this podcast is Dixon is teaching me a lot of these songs that I didn't know. So yeah, let's move on to 1991. So for 1991, number three for me, REM, Losing My Religion. Number two, Pearl Jam, Alive. And number one, all right, I swear I didn't do it like this on purpose, U2 with One.
Oh, there you go. See, I knew at some point we'd get to your U2 adoration. 1991 was the year I graduated high school, strangely. And a very apropos song for that in the number three spot for me is EMF with Unbelievable. Because if you knew me back then, that was a weird thing, seeing me actually graduate. Pearl Jam made my list as well, but I went with Black. It's just, if I never heard Alive again, I'd be cool. You know, I've just heard it so many times. And for me, number one in 1991 was Primus and Jerry Was a Race Car Driver.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that one. We did talk about that. I know there are going to be several in here that are in the mainstream. But again, because I'm hearing a lot of these songs for the first time, because I was 1 year old in 1991. So they're still kind of new to me. Moving on to 1992. Number three, REM, Man on the Moon. Number two, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Under the Bridge. And number one of my absolute favorite songs, now in my favorites playlist, The Cure with Friday I'm in Love.
All right. Well, our number one song is the same from 1992, The Cure and Friday I'm in Love. The reason everybody knows that song is because it's legendary, it's iconic, it belongs there. The other two for me in 1992 could not be more different. Tori Amos with Silent All These Years off her debut album, Little Earthquakes, and the Beastie Boys with So What You Want.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And I got to say too, none of these were easy because there are so many songs. 1993, Radiohead, Creep. That's coming in at number three for me. Number two, The Cranberries with Linger. And number one, which was one of my alternative 101 homework assignments for an album I had never heard before, and that was Blind Melon with No Rain.
Very cool, very cool. 1993, vastly different for me, with James and the iconic song Laid, best known probably for the American Pie series. Bjork, former frontwoman from the Sugar Cubes, with an album off her debut album, ironically entitled Debut, called Human Behavior. And Evan Dando and the Lemonheads with Into Your Arms.
Nice. 1994, number three, Stone Temple Pilots, Interstate Love Song. Number two, Oasis, Live Forever. And number one, going with the Cranberries once again in their hit song, Zombie.
You got a lot of repeats, my man. You got REM in there twice. You got the Cranberries in there twice. I see where you're looking. All right, 1994 for me. Was the second single from Blind Melon's self-titled album, but I went Tones of Home, and that was a single in 94 off an album that was released in 93. A band we briefly touched on called Pavement, and a track called Cut Your Hair, which has a second life now in a couple of different commercials, television soundtracks as well. And for me, in the number one spot in 1994 were The Flaming Lips with She Don't Use Jelly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. 1995, halfway through the decade. And I do have to say, I think 1995 was, I was 5 years old. And I think those were like the earliest memories I have in my life. I don't really remember anything before 5 years old. And I'm cheating a little bit with this year because I have two honorable mentions, because we're getting into the territory where I'm starting to remember this music. And there are just a few that I couldn't narrow it down to just three. So I have to give an honorable mention to two songs, Live with Lightning Crashes and Oasis with Wonderwall, two big hit songs from that year. And going into number three, Alanis Morissette with Ironic. Radiohead with Fake Plastic Trees, which I'm ashamed to say that I heard for the first time while we were doing this podcast. And number one, I think you guessed it, Dixon. I got to go with the Goo Goo Dolls and Name.
All right. My 1995 was drastically different than yours. A little UK band called the Stone Roses and Love Spreads. Probably their only commercial success, but the influence that they had upon an entire generation of rock bands in the 2000s and to this day is just still felt. Portishead in Sour Times. And for me, PJ Harvey in that number one spot with Down by the Water. I have realized now that we're halfway through the decade that you and I would both be festival goers in the 90s, except we would be going to two completely different festivals. I would probably be headed out for Lollapalooza, and you would probably be headed out for Lilith Fair.
For what?
Lilith Fair.
Oh, yeah, we did talk about that. Yeah. Okay. I guess maybe this is something we should talk about more. Lollapalooza was, you know, the type of artist that you're saying that you liked. I still would have gone anyway, especially now looking back on it with 2021, where we haven't been to live shows in over a year. But yeah, probably at the time, probably would have been going to the other one.
Yeah.
1996. Number three, Smashing Pumpkins, 1979. And I remember hearing that song on the radio too. Everclear with Santa Monica. And number one, Oasis with Champagne Supernova.
Again, we have no crossover here. I've got Poe with Angry Johnny. If you're not familiar with Poe, go back and check out her debut self-titled album. It's pretty brilliant for the time period. I went with Radiohead's next single, which was released in 1996, also off their sophomore album, The Bends. It's called High and Dry. And for me, my favorite track of 1996 was Back and Where It's At.
Okay. I almost picked High and Dry because that I can actually play that song on guitar and it's one of my favorites, but that was a tough one. 1997. Have an honorable mention with this year too. And the honorable mention is going to the Wallflowers with One Headlight. I just like that song. Number three, The Verve with Bittersweet Symphony. Number two, Foo Fighters, Everlong. And number one, I think you guessed it again, Dixon, Third Eye Blind with Semi-Charm Life.
All right. 1997 again, a little different for me. I went with something that probably wouldn't be on very many people's lists in my number three spot. It was part of your alternative 101, and it's the Mighty Mighty Bosstones, but not the impression I get. The little-known second single, Royal Oil, which we did talk about in depth with that segment. Also, I've got the Sneaker Pimps with Six Underground, and for 1997, there was no other artist for me than Fiona Apple. Her single Criminal was just genius. And with her comeback in 2020, it's a great story.
Yeah, that was a good one. Okay, 1998. I've got another honorable mention, and this is my last one, well, at least for the decade. And the honorable mention from 1998 is going to Semisonic with Closing Time. I know you hate that song, and I know it's so overplayed, but it's just one of those ones that classic 90s, how can you not mention it? But it's still not my top three. Starting with number three, Bare Naked Ladies with 1 Week, which we spent a lot of time in that episode talking about this weird conspiracy.
There's some conspiracy theories out there, my man.
And Dixon, you still left me speechless from that. Listen to the 1998 episode and you'll know what we're talking about. Number two, Third Eye Blind with Jumper. And number one, got to go with the Goo Goo Dolls and Iris. Also have to say Black Balloon, which that was on the same album as Iris. Black Balloon is my favorite Goo Goo Dolls song. Got to give love to my Buffalo Boys.
There you go. And ironically, and if you heard me crap all over Semisonic in our 1998 episode, I will say that number three on that list, just like I said in that very podcast, Singing in My Sleep is my third favorite song of 1998. That song to this day still gets me every time I hear it. And I wish that was the song that radio stations still played and not Closing Time. And I get it, you know, like I'm the dude that put myself in the position where I worked in bars for 20 years. So I heard it a lot, even before my radio days. And I just never want to hear it again unless it's Stanley Hudson singing it. Number two for 1998 is Karma Police from Radiohead. Number one, although the album was released in 1997, the single came to fruition and was really big in 1998. It was also your homework assignment, Ben Folds 5 and Brick.
Yeah, you know, I should have given an honorable mention to that. I mean, I do like the song Brick, but it's just so depressing to listen to. And I honestly didn't even know what it was about till we started talking about it in the podcast. But that
I'm not trying to, I'm not trying to glorify the subject matter at all, but I think it speaks volumes to the growth of people and the outlook on the world. And it shines a light into what was happening in 1998. That a song that so openly talked about abortion went to number one on the alternative charts and crossed over to pop radio as well.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And the album that it was on, so good.
Forever and ever, amen.
Forever and ever, amen. All right, and that brings us to the final year of the 90s. 1999. No honorable mention for this one. Just going to give you my top three, starting with number three. And I think 1999 was really, really hard for me. So here it goes. Number three, Sugar Ray with Every Morning. Number two, Third Eye Blind, Never Let You Go. And number one, classic 90s song everybody knows, Blink 182, All the Small Things.
Mine's quite different, sir. I went with Mike Ness in Don't Think Twice, the classic Bob Dylan cover off his Genius Solitaire record. Again, I went with your homework assignment and the Shoe of Divine with their single Home off the New Parade. And for me, 1999 was all about a little album called Clarity from Jimmy Eat World. And the single on that one was called Lucky Denver Mint.
Yep. Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. Well, I think we had what? We had one crossover, didn't we?
We had a few.
We had a couple.
Yeah.
Now we're going to see how that looks in our top 10. So let's rank our top 10 songs from the entire decade. The 1990s. I guess.
How did you do yours? Because I okay. here's mine. These are not my top 10 songs of the 90s. What I did was I went with 10 songs that I feel are the most iconic from the 90s, and I went your honorable mention route with it as well. And strangely, every song on here does not appear anywhere else on my list.
Oh, so like none of these ones you're going to say you've mentioned yet.
Correct. These are all okay. Things that I think define the decade, not only from first person perspective of being Gen X, but also the songs that have become iconic in staples of the era. Things that are going to be for your generation, the Bohemian Rhapsodies, the Stairway to Heavens that were for the generation before me.
Okay.
So yours are probably based a little bit more on what you liked, and mine are based a little bit more on their ultimate and overall iconicness.
Mine's a little bit of a hybrid. I did throw in some that I obviously really liked, but I tried to pick ones that I felt were also very iconic for the decade. And I really focused on the songs that I remember from that time. Again, you know, 1995 is probably about the earliest memory I'm going to get. So it's a lot of songs that are from 1995 and beyond. I do have to give an honorable mention before I get into my other honorable mentions. I do at least need to mention Nirvana and their impact for the decade. And I recognize their impact on music and alternative music and the world. I did not have them on this list, and that is not because I don't like them. I just didn't grow up listening to their music during that time. So I just wanted to get that out of the way and clear that up. So I'll kick it off now with my two honorable mentions. And I'll start off with one that I mentioned already, Blind Melon with No Rain. And the other honorable mention, The Wallflowers with One Headlight. I just like those songs. So let's get into number 10. And I'm going to take a sip for this.
All right. Well, I'll give you my, I have five honorable mentions that didn't make my top 10 list, but I are
Let's do that.
Truly iconic and deserve mention. The Verve and Bittersweet Symphony, which I'm going to assume is on your list. Mazzy Star and Fade Into You. Smashing Pumpkins in 1979, which I'm fairly certain is also on your list. REM and Losing My Religion. And one that I think will surprise you, but I think its impact is, bigger than anything else from this era is U2 with Mysterious Ways.
Hmm. I'll admit I actually didn't have them on my list. And that may be surprising because I am a huge U2 fan. But when I when I think of U2, I don't really think of the 90s. I think of the 80s and not really too much outside of that, even though they are one of my favorite bands.
I think their 90s work goes really, really, really under the radar. And yeah, there's some genius things in there. And I'm not talking about like Lemon or Numb. I'm talking, you know, Who's Gonna Ride All Your Wild Horses, yeah, Mysterious Ways. And there were just so many amazing songs that just became the fabric of that era. And for me, Mysterious Ways is the one that I think gave way to there being a little bit more experimentation with the overall rockness of things and allowing some of these sort of macho dudes to, I mean, take the lead of a Michael Stipe or a Bono or even an Eddie Vedder and bring it down. And this is also like the decade that saw MTV's Unplugged become this big thing. And, you know, the bravado went away a little bit and the softer side of things came back without becoming like James Taylor-esque. You know what I mean? He could still be relatively masculine for the time with an acoustic guitar.
Yeah. And, you know, Octoon Baby, I think is Octoon Baby and Joshua Tree are their two best albums. And Octoon Baby, I think that was a 90s album, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So didn't mention U2 on my list. But again, these were songs that I think defined the decade and kind of a mix of ones that I really love. So here we go. Number 10, Bare Naked Ladies, 1 Week. Number 9, Smashing Pumpkins, 1979. Number 8, The Verve, Bittersweet Symphony. Number 7, Oasis, Wonderwall. Number 6, The Cranberries, Zombie. Number 5, Third Eye Blind, Semi-Charmed Life. Number 4, Goo Goo Dolls, Iris. Number 3, Goo Goo Dolls, Name. Number 2, this was almost number 1, Alanis Morissette with Ironic. But I had to go with number 1 because I really, really think, in my opinion, this song defines my generation of this time. And that is Blink 182 with All the Small Things. And I say that because I think it was just one of those songs that, you know, if you're in your early 30s, you heard that song everywhere. You, when you were with your friends, that was always the song that you heard. And I could be wrong in this, but that's just what I think. And that's why it is number 1 on my list.
For people in your age group, the middle millennials, I guess is the best way to put it. Absolutely, because that's a 1999 classic. I mean, that actually gets lumped into the 2000s a lot of times too, just because of where it fell in 1999. We have some crossover for sure. And like I said, I went with the iconic stature of not only the band, but the song itself, whether it's still relevant, how old it sounds like. And that's why some of the stuff, like for me, like Mazzy Star and Smashing Pumpkins sound very 90s in the production value. And some of the stuff on my list actually does too, but I think that's part of the charm. Like in the number 10 spot, I don't want the updated weird edition of Jane Says that everybody plays from Jane's Addiction. I want the original off the album. I don't want those weird like Hawaiian drum bell. I hate it. So yeah, if we're talking about the original Jane's Addiction, Jane Says, that's my number 10. And it is the original version only. And I think the production value on that lends itself to much the way it did with Sublime. It defined a generation. Number 9 for me is one of your favorite bands, Third Eye Blind and Semi-Charmed Life. They're, in my opinion, Stephen Jenkins, one of the most underrated hit writers of the 1990s. And I think overall, he's an underrated songwriter in general. For me, number 8 was Weezer with Buddy Holly, not only for the lasting power of the song and the band, but the video and how iconic Spike Jonze made that song within an entire generation's mind. Oasis with Wonderwall, Radiohead and Creep, Cranberry's Zombie, we're right there. I think our orders were a little bit mixed, but hey, What are you going to do? Number 4, Green Day, Basket Case. There's no denying Green Day's impact, longevity, and that's still a song that it hasn't fallen into that Pearl Jam Alive territory for me yet. Like, I don't choose to listen to it, but if it comes on, I don't groan. And I think that speaks volumes to Green Day and Billy Joe's writing ability. Top three are the Red Hot Chili Peppers and Under the Bridge, Pearl Jam and Jeremy, Nirvana Smells Like Teen Spirit. And the thing I will say about that is, yes, it's cliche, and yes, those are the three biggest bands in the 90s, and yes, those are the three biggest singles, but record sales and streaming don't lie. And those are all songs that still have selling power, streaming power, and are iconic to multiple generations at this point. So for me, you know, if I put my favorites of the 1990s up there, it would have been stuff we didn't even talk about. Would have been a bunch of wild underground like Fugazi or The Descendants, you know what I mean? Like, or even like some weird like West Coast ska funk, like 24/7 Spies or Fishbone. So I think, you know, for what we did for this last 10 years, we focused on the singles. I'm glad that you did your favorites because it was a learning process and I can now see where your ear is. I felt like I had to go with the ones that were the most iconic. And I know that a lot of people will debate me on whether Jane's deserves that 10 spot over bands like the Smashing Pumpkins, REM, or even The Verve. I don't think The Verve is in contention just based on the controversy over the sample. I think that takes it out of the top 10. I think the Smashing Pumpkins could flip-flop with Jane's Addiction. But for me, being a Gen X and having lived through the whole 90s as an adult, if I had to go back and listen to one of those two songs over and over again, I'm going to go Jane's Addiction every time.
Yeah. Quite the contrast for sure. I mean, we, like you said, we double dipped on a lot of those songs. But you know, it's interesting to see the comparison between us because, you know, you get some people that'll say, you know, oh, this song was the best song of the decade. But I guess the question is, you know, where were you in your life at that time? You know, I hate leaving Nirvana out of any of this. I hate leaving Pearl Jam out of my top 10. I really do. But those weren't a part of my life in the 90s.
But you were also aware of them before we started this podcast.
I was, but I wasn't aware of them until later on in life. You know, I didn't have parents that listened to those bands. So that can, you know, that can also change too, depending on who your parents listen to while you're growing up. So, that makes a big difference too. But, you know, your top 10 are different because you were graduating high school at the beginning of the 90s. I was born at the beginning of the 90s and entering the early years of my teens toward the end. So, you know, it's interesting to see that comparison there.
I'm interested to dive into the 2000s because I think that's where we're really going to divert a little bit. Just because of the, now, as we get into the early 2000s is where I began doing much larger things and less local bands and more touring acts and going on tour and tour managing and really kind of rubbing shoulders with a lot of the bands that we're going to be talking about throughout the next 20 editions of this podcast. Now, mentioning the next 20, there's going to be a little bit of a break before we get to the 2000s because next week we're going to talk grunge. We're going to dissect it in a way that I've wanted to for a very long time. And it's important for me to have you along because you're sort of approaching grunge as a grad student would in era of their expertise. So it would be the equivalent of like a history major going back and studying the War of 1812. We're sending you back because I want your perceptions on grunge. And we're going to have 95X Midday Guy and Program Director Joe D join us because for me, this is interesting because much like Jack and I are at opposite ends of the spectrum, for grunge, Joe, being 5 years younger than me, was just entering high school as I was exiting college. And just that short period of time of 5 years shows you the impact that grunge had on the artist, so to speak. Joe was in a couple of very popular bands in and around Syracuse. He's toured extensively with Joey Belladonna from Anthrax and his solo project, Belladonna. Joe's an industry professional that's seen it on all sides the same way that I have. But I love the age gap between he and I to have perspective and then to have the sort of perspective of a student who went back, didn't experience Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Alice in Chains, Soundgarden, Screaming Trees, Tad, all those bands firsthand. You're going back and researching them the way I did when I was looking at old soul records when I was a kid. And I think that perspective brings a lot to it as well, especially considering part of this discussion next week is going to be, was this style of music truly alternative or not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, I think, been one of the big questions that we've been having throughout this journey. And that's going to be really, really fun to tackle. And I'm super excited about it. So that is coming up next time in our next bonus episode of the Roots of Alternative podcast. And then 2 weeks from now, we're going to be having our final bonus episode before we start the 2000s or the aughts, as we call them. We are going to dive in and dissect Radiohead's album, OK Computer. And I'm very excited to do that because I've actually, I've developed a very huge affection for Radiohead throughout this podcast too. So I'm looking forward to doing that. And we're going to have a special guest join us for that too.
We are. Jack brought his sort of his ace in the hole along for his YouTube bonus episode. I'm going to bring mine. And mine is Jeff York of the Syracuse band Major Player. Jeff is a gearhead as well as a musician. And I think he's a bigger fan of Radiohead and OK Computer than I am, which, hey, all the more power to you, buddy. I can't wait to sit down and dissect this with you. And I love the fact that you're getting into Radiohead and that you like the bends and you like Pablo Honey. I can't wait for you to sit down and really dive into OK Computer because I'm dying to get your thoughts on how different it is. Because, man, like you and I talk about artists that evolve on a pretty regular basis. And from Pablo Honey to there was a little UK thing called My Iron Lung in there that came out in between. I don't count that. So from Pablo Honey to the Bends to OK Computer was like literally watching a toddler go from, you know, like not being able to crawl to crawling to walking. Like it really, it is just sort of like that evolution of man meme that we all see like in musical form, just like. And again, I love the early Radiohead stuff and I love what they become. And I love that they're still so weird in doing their thing in 2021. I don't love what they're doing now because it's way too far out there. But I love that part of the Radiohead story that I would like to tell during that episode was this is the album that gave them the freedom to do whatever it is they wanted for the rest of their careers. And they have definitely done that.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. Well, that is coming very soon, so be on the lookout for those. And again, if you're just joining us for the first time, watching us on our 95X Facebook page or other social media, make sure you subscribe to the podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. You can also go up to 95x.com/rootsofalternative and check out all of our past episodes. We also do have a lot of bonus material on those episodes at the website too. Things like interviews. We had an interview that Dixon did with Stephen Jenkins recently from Third Eye Blind. That's in our 1997 episode bonus content. So right up there, 95x.com, just click the banner for Roots of Alternative podcast, and you can see all of them there. So,
and if you like this, let us know because we'll do it at the end of the 2000s too. We'll get on camera and stare all creepily into your homes.
It's been nice seeing you, man.
You too. It's been a while, actually. I mean, we have our weekly conference call for work, but, you know, normally it's just the sound of your voice and I have to play theater of the mind. And this was nice. It's nice. And you got the logo in the back there. I like that.
Trying to make it all official here. Most of what you can do it. Working from home right now. So, all right. Well, exactly. Thank you again for listening. Thanks for checking this out. Let us know what you think in the comments. Send us an email. We got all that information right up there. Again, 95x.com/rootsofalternative. We will talk to you next time when we tackle grunge and the Seattle sound. Until then, my name is Jack. That's Dixon. This is the Roots of Alternative podcast for 95X. See you.